Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
The hidden pandemic at Amazon, a new report from four major unions. Baseball players locked out. And today on the show, the Washington Baltimore News Guild and the general president at the United Association. Welcome to the Thursday, December 7th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and the platform known as Stitcher. We have two guests on the show today. We're going to start things off with Fatima Hussein. She's been on, I want to say, about maybe 3-4 months ago. She is president of the Washington Baltimore News Guild, also vice chair at the Bloomberg Industry Group Guild. She's a worker safety legal reporter for Bloomberg Law and previously served as president of the Indianapolis Newspaper Guild. By the way, the staffers at the Washington Baltimore News Guild have a combined 75-plus years experience in organizing and bargaining, as well as representing, mobilizing, and educating workers. That's what it's all about. And they've got lots of units. Website is real simple. Just go to WBNG.org, WBNG.org. And their units include the AFL-CIO. Now, you have to know that the AFL-CIO is not a union that bargains contracts for employees, but rather a federation of more than 50 affiliated unions, 58, I believe. The federation has several distinct sections and sponsors many programs, all aimed at advancing social and economic justice for U.S. workers by enabling them to have a say on the job. Well, the News Guild represents the workers at the AFL-CIO. Let's see. They also have representatives at the American Nurses Association, American Postal Workers Union. Like, these are the people that work in the office, okay? Understand that? Baltimore Sun, the Catholic News Service, the Coalition of Kaiser Permanente Unions. There's a group there. The Florida AFL-CIO, the Georgia AFL-CIO, Jobs with Justice, In These Times magazine. That's a great publication. If you're not subscribed to that, do check that out. Very, very, very union-friendly. Local 500, SEIU, let's see, the North Carolina Labor Federation, Radio Free Asia, represented by the Washington Baltimore News Guild, the Washington Post, United Food and Commercial Workers, United Way Worldwide. I mean, there's so many, they're all posted on the website. So Fatima is going to talk about how their representation is going, employers calling for a return to the office, what tactics they are using, how the guild is addressing negotiating so many first contracts. There's a lot of organizing going on, especially on digital platforms. And the reporters are saying, you know what, I got to be paid better, I got to get better benefits, and that's why they're demanding union representation. And I'll tell you, there's a lot of people burned out right now. And she'll address that as well. Now, for the rest of the show, here's what we're going to do. We are going to link up with a feed that is courtesy of Team AFL-CIO. And on that feed is the general president of Mark McManus. Mark McManus did a video presentation to fellow union members, and he praised the many provisions in the new law that will modernize our energy and water infrastructure. I'm talking about the bipartisan infrastructure bill. And this is what Mark said. For 132 years, the United Association has never been afraid of new innovation, new technology, and new opportunity. We should be excited and overjoyed. This is truly a transformational bill for our country's infrastructure that will provide for remarkable opportunities and advancements. And no longer will the United States of America have a worse public infrastructure than many foreign countries. That's one heck of a statement. And it comes from the general president of the United Association. And this is like a 10-minute clip. And he calls out the people, both Democrats and Republicans, who did not vote for the bill. How many times have you heard me say, I've never seen a Democratic or Republican bridge or a road? Come on, guys and women. Let's get together and get America moving again. That's what this legislation was all about. So Mark is going to fill in the latter part of the show. Now, we were supposed to link up with Sherrod Brown today, but he got tied up in committee votes, and he is going to have to take a pass today. We may get him tomorrow. He also wanted to talk about the infrastructure bill. He's going around the state of Ohio touting the benefits of the bipartisan deal and also the Build Back Better agenda. So that's how the lineup of the show is going to be today. Amazon, big story today. According to a report released by a coalition of four unions, Teamsters, SEIU, CWA, and the United Farm Workers, according to those four, at least 20,000 Amazon workers tested positive for COVID-19 last year, though the e-commerce conglomerate reported only 27 of those infections to federal regulators. So now the unions are calling it a hidden pandemic. 27 reported, actually 20,000 positive. The coalition sent a complaint to Doug Parker, Assistant Secretary of Labor for OSHA, demanding that the agency investigate Amazon's disturbing pattern of misleading or grossly incomplete information provided to authorities around COVID-19 cases in its warehouses, accusing that putting workers' lives at risk by depriving OSHA of information about COVID-19 cases in its facilities. Now, this report comes on the heels of the National Labor Relations Board's order this week to rerun the highly publicized union election at the Amazon warehouse in Bessemer, Alabama. When that's going to happen, we don't know. But the NLRB found a number of improprieties in that election, so they said it's got to be done again. Now, the union's report is merely the latest in a long string of allegations, accusations, complaints, and even lawsuits charging that Amazon has not done enough to protect its vast workforce during the pandemic. Similarly, New York's Attorney General Letitia James, who's running for governor of New York in next year's crowded Democratic primary, on Tuesday filed a motion seeking an emergency injunction to force Amazon to immediately implement stricter COVID-19 safety protocols. Amazon and its leadership banked billions of dollars during the COVID-19 pandemic, and as the crisis rages on, the health and concerns of the workers continued to be ignored, said James. In that complaint, which is filed in the state trial court for the County of New York, James alleges that the company violated the state's labor law that requires employers to provide reasonable and adequate protection to the lives, health, and safety of their employees by repeatedly and persistently failing to comply with its obligation to institute reasonable and adequate measures to protect its workers from the spread of the virus in its New York City facilities, and requests that the court enjoin Amazon from engaging in these unlawful practices and requiring the company to take all affirmative steps to ensure that the company reasonably and adequately protects the lives, health, and safety of its employees. So, whoa, there's a lot going on there. A lot going on there. And one more here before we break. Last night, right before midnight, 1 minute before midnight, the 5-year collective bargaining agreement, the CBA, between the Major League Baseball Players Association, which represents 1,200 professional baseball players and 30 MLB team owners, expired. The two sides have been negotiating for months, and though MLB officials and team owners met with players and their union reps on Monday and Tuesday, the talks went nowhere. So right before the deadline last night, the owners voted to lock the players out. Now, a lockout in baseball would place the entire league on hold, thus freezing the free agency and trading process, barring players from accessing team facilities. And if it goes into next year, no spring training, maybe even regular season games. There have been 8 previous work stoppages in Major League Baseball. The last one, a player strike, which started in August of 1994, was the longest in the sport's history, lasting more than 7 months and resulting in the cancellation of nearly 1,000 games and the remainder of the 94-95 Major League Baseball season. I hope it doesn't go in that direction, but right now, it ain't pretty. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, the Washington Baltimore News Guild.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's workforce is being brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy,
and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
The Heat and Frost Insulators and Allied Workers are proud to be a title sponsor for America's Workforce Radio. The Insulators Union is leading the way in the mechanical insulation industry, fire stopping, and infectious disease control. Regarded as North America's energy conservation specialists, these professionals are known for their professional work and dedication. You can learn more about the Insulators Union at insulators.org.
Union members need to be heard. Reliable and convenient union voting has never been more important than it is now. Make voting easy for your membership by working with survey and ballot systems. SBS offers encrypted and monitored solutions that ensure your elections are accurate and accessible for every member through mail-in, online, and in-person voting. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com and take the next step in getting secure and auditable elections.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook. That would be AWF Union Podcast, which is also our Twitter handle, AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the North Coast Labor Federation, all connected to the AFL-CIO. Let's go to line number one. Welcome back to the show. We had her on some months ago. Fatima Hussein is her name. And she is president of the Washington Baltimore News Guild. She's also vice chair of the Bloomberg Industry Group Guild. And she has been president of the Washington Baltimore News Guild for about 1 year now. And what a year it has been. I'm telling you, it's hard to believe this year is almost over, too. Fatima Hussein, welcome back to the show. How are we doing today?
I'm very good. It's very nice to be back.
Refresh our listeners, if you will. How many members in your guild and Washington, Baltimore? Maybe you can give us some details on the organization. Go ahead.
We have over 2,000 members, and we're persistently growing, especially because two of our largest shops are open shops, one in a right-to-work state. So we're supporting both closed shops of staff union members, as well as a lot of journalists who we have to organize and bring into the union and sign them and get them to sign cards. And that's a very interesting challenge given the pandemic and how hard it is to do one-on-ones when you can't actually do that face-to-face a lot of the time. Our union is comprised of journalists and a lot of nonprofit workers. Before I took over, there was some contention about nonprofit workers and journalists coming together to, in solidarity. A lot of the time, there's this notion that journalists have to be 100% objective about everything all the time. And that is still true, and we still and will always believe that. But there are ways that you can act in solidarity with staff union workers and workers who have a political affiliation without necessarily breaking that commitment to remaining as objective as humanly possible.
Right, right. Yeah, everything is political today, and I know there are boundaries on that. So, yeah, I'd like to get into that a little bit more. But you mentioned right-to-work state. I assume that would be Virginia. Is that what we're referencing here?
Correct. And we represent workers not just in the D.C., Maryland, Virginia boundaries. We represent workers in Florida. We have workers, I believe, in Georgia. There are a lot of members in Washington, Baltimore. We're kind of unique in that way.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I know you have a lot of units. It's really interesting, your spread, which is pretty much national. That's interesting in itself. Let's stop here. I want to talk more about right to work. There's a lot of people that don't understand right to work. And when you say it, oh, well, I should have the right to work. Well, why are you denying my right to work? But it's much deeper than that. You have to explain that to people. And that's why so many unions say right to work for less. And that's got to be in that quote. Yeah, right to work for less. Can you tell us, let's use Virginia for an example, on the difficulties because they had an opportunity to turn that around. They had Democrats in, they had the State House, they had the Senate, they had the governor's mansion. They had an opportunity, they failed to do it, and now it's off the table because they just went Republican there. But talk to me about how difficult that is to organize when you have a right-to-work state.
That is a really great question. It reminds me of how painful and hard it is a lot of the time to convince workers to join the union when they get the benefits of the union without paying their dues. And that's the meaning of right to work for those who don't know or who are still learning about unions. Generally, you get the benefit of the union without paying your dues. And that is really supremely difficult. I cannot express how difficult that is. But at the same time, I think if there's any silver lining in that lingo, right to work, and the ramifications of it, it's that it keeps the union honest in the sense that we have to work extremely hard, not just stewarding and, doing all of the things that come with just maintaining a shop, working with our rep, ensuring that the company is or companies are adhering to the contract, but then also doing these one-on-ones with workers and giving them that hard sell of, why do I need a union? Why should I pay my dues if I have the benefit of the union anyway? There is this sort of exercise that comes with having organizers go to every single worker, both dues payers and non-dues payers, to ask them to either, can you do a bit more so that we can grow and be more aggressive with the company? And at the same time, just show people what the union's value is. I'm a firm believer in people showing the value of the union. There are a lot of unions that are just sort of service unions and exist only to have people kind of complain about their workplace and then have a steward kind of guide them through it. And then, the union handles the rest. And that's not really beneficial when it comes down to negotiating and bargaining. You really want to have a robust shop. It's hard to do that with right to work. I cannot express that enough, but I think it does keep the union active throughout the year in that in those in between bargaining years, so that you're constantly doing that hard sell to workers.
Yeah, yeah. These states are just raising the bar and making it so much more difficult. And I know one of the things you wanted to talk about today, Fatima, was union volunteer burnout and how you try to manage that. Would you say then, because of states like Virginia, that's contributing to the volunteers being burned out because of the status there?
Oh, definitely. I mean, I don't think it's just right to work. It definitely is, in that, you know, having to, I'm thinking of so many different things right now. I'm thinking of the pandemic and how incredibly difficult it is to worry about the safety, the health and safety of your workforce and your family at the same time, as well as the nature of this work, which is looking for the best in people and always trying to find the best in your coworkers and the best in others so that you can come together in solidarity. And people taking advantage of that and kind of asking you to volunteer constantly, 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 to the point of kind of having a sort of resentment towards your union. I know that this thought that I have really speaks to the people who are working really hard for their unions for free. I know I do my job for free. I run the Washington Baltimore News Guild for free. I do this for Bloomberg for free. It's very easy for the people that you care deeply for to take advantage of that. And I think that's something I've learned as president of WBNG is it's so important to have volunteers and it's so important to appreciate them. I cannot express that enough. There has to be a way to manage the burnout that a lot of the volunteers are experiencing, especially those hyper active people and the stewards who represent their coworkers day in and day out. They need a steward too, and they need somebody to check in on them to make sure that they're not overburdened with the burdens of their coworkers.
Fatima, I want to talk about workers going back to the office, and I don't know what's going to happen here. We've got this new variant that is rattling all the markets right now, and I don't know. This is going to take a long time before things get back to normal, it seems. But with that being said, you've got the employer saying, hey, you gotta come back in the office here. And they've got all kind of different ways of trying to convince workers. Can you tell us about some of them?
Sure. We've seen a lot of different employers use different tactics to try to get workers back into the office. Some workers are okay with coming back into the office. There are a lot that are surprised with the very short period of time that employers are giving to return and making these promises to workers that things are safe when they might not necessarily have those assurances when they get back. I know we are facing a lot of separate sort of situations with several units that are approaching potentially going to arbitration or just having this public fight with their employers over return to the office. And with the new variant, that doesn't make things easier. It makes it a lot more difficult because the situation is constantly fluid and changing. I think part of the reason why I wanted to talk about this is because I'd love to field some of the ways that other unions and other locals have addressed this issue, because we have about 40 units, and if every single unit is facing the exact same problem, one of the things that we're trying to avoid, or that I foresee us trying to avoid, is the cost of arbitrating every single one of these issues when so many of them are so similar. I've brought this up several times over in our local meetings. How can we address this issue as a local, as opposed to every single unit sort of doing it every man person for themselves. Mm-hmm. I think that will cost unions a lot to address this issue singularly, unit by unit, instead of as locals. And I'm still not sure how to do that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's almost like divide and conquer, you know? They're trying to make it so much more difficult for you. It's part of the strategy on management side, right?
Right.
Yeah, they do just about everything they can. You know what? I got to take a quick break here. Joining us on our live line right now is Fatima Hussein. She is president of the Washington Baltimore News Guild. The website is WBNG.org. You can also follow them on Twitter at WBNG320 35 WBNG 320 35. Later in the show, Mike McManus, who is the general president of the United Association, will be talking about the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act. Back in a few minutes.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.
America's Workforce appreciates our sponsor, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, who represents more than 18,000 workers from 19 affiliated local unions and district councils.
Nurses, doctors, and caregivers at the VA are under attack. They face hostile management, callous agency heads, and an administration that's stomping all over their ability to speak up for our veterans. Unions are even being kicked out of their offices, a direct attempt to silence the voice of VA employees. When VA workers are under attack, veterans pay the price. Costly privatization and outsourcing will run rampant, meaning fewer services and worse quality of care for our nation's heroes. It's time to stand up for the workers who care for our veterans. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees.
From the Golden Gate Bridge to the St. Louis Gateway Arch, the Sears Tower, and just about every building, bridge, and structure in between, our cities and towns wouldn't be the same without ironworkers. With over 3,000 contractors employing more than 130,000 highly trained ironworkers and 20,000 apprentices, the Ironworkers Union stands ready and able to shape the future of our skylines. Learn more at ironworkers.org. Ironworkers, the sky's the limit.
America's Workforce Radio is sponsored in part by the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 6, representing painters, glazers, drywall finishers, and sign and display industry workers. They remind you that belonging to a union is your right as an American.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
By the way, we're available on 6 platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. And when you get an opportunity, just sign up. Receive our shows on a regular basis and give us a rating. We always like those 5-star ratings. Before we get back to our guests, I want to give another plug here to the Alliance for American Manufacturing. We had their executive director, Scott Paul, on the show on Monday, talking about, well, among many other things, the 2021 Made in America Holiday Gift Guide. Shop made in the USA this holiday. And they do this every year. They've been doing it for 8 years now. And the guide, which you can access online at AmericanManufacturing.org, AmericanManufacturing.org, it highlights more than 100 companies from all 50 states, the District of Columbia, and Puerto Rico. And it's got the top 10 reasons to shop made in America this holiday season. Well, number one, support local businesses, create American jobs. Get this. One study finds that if every American spends $64, which isn't very much, $64 on made in USA items this season, it would create 200,000 new jobs. All right? 200,000 new jobs. There's more here. Made in the USA protects the environment, boosts the economy, builds community, secures the future for our children, supports entrepreneurship. Check it all out. The Made in America Holiday Gift Guide. on behalf of the Alliance for American Manufacturing, one of the new sponsors of America's Workforce. Let's go back to our live line. Rejoin Fatima Hussein. Fatima is president of the Washington Baltimore News Guild, also vice chair of the Bloomberg Industry Group Guild. She's a worker safety legal reporter. And I'll tell you, safety is key. It's always been key, but especially now with this pandemic. And Fatima, I want to talk about the units of the guild briefly. And I mentioned this at the top of the show, how many places you represent, including the AFL-CIO, a couple of state federations. I mean, it's across the country. Is this something that's been part of the Washington Baltimore News Guild for some time? Did you expand on this? Maybe you can give me a little history and how this kind of rolled out over the years.
Yeah, that's a good question. We represent roughly 40 units currently, and that's made up of, you're right, the AFL-CIO Staff Union, the Washington Post, Bloomberg Industry Group. We just really celebrated hard, finally hearing and getting Politico and those workers to join WBNG, as well as workers from the Washingtonian and RAICES in Texas, which is made up of a lot of immigration attorneys. We also have the SPLC Staff Union. There's a lot of growth in WBNG, and I think that's in part because we, for some time, would take on a lot of units that other locals were afraid to or felt like they could be it could be hard or too expensive to represent them in bargaining. And I think when others saw that we would take on units that other locals wouldn't, that they wanted to be a part of us because they knew we would represent them no matter what. And we've done a really good job over the years of getting new first contracts and getting better and better first contracts and hiring reps who understand organizing, which is really important. And yeah, we're really, really proud of what we're doing. And I think in this past year, all I've tried to do is keep us out of trouble, make sure we're not losing money, and continue organizing and getting the biggest shops, in, especially in D.C. That's our primary goal.
Keep us out of trouble and stop losing money. I like that.
We're doing really well financially. We're doing fantastically with our organizing. We just hired a new rep. I think the companies where where the workers are represented should be afraid of us, and I think they are, and they know that we're very equipped to negotiate first contracts. There are a couple that have yet to be fully ratified that show that our capability of negotiating is getting better and we're maturing as a union, whereas for a while we had a lot of younger people who didn't understand the importance of like almost learning and memorizing their contract like it was a religious document. And now we have it to a point where everyone in their units, not everyone in every unit, but a lot of people understand the sheer importance of just having the power with knowing their contract and enforcing it, which is another issue.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've been negotiating many, many first contracts. If you don't mind, can you talk about how many are going on and how difficult that process is? Because as you know, okay, you got workers that struggle to form a union. It takes time. There's a lot of roadblocks. We know that happens. Ask the folks at Amazon. There's a good one right there. Finally, you get the union, and then you got to get that first contract. That's a road to hoe in itself. Talk to me about that part, Fatima.
We have a lot of new first contracts. There are there's a list that's sent to me every month that shows where we are with bargaining in all of our units, and there are quite a few where we're just beginning bargaining. And what we've tried to do is hire new reps who are extremely adept at organizing and have organizing experience, because we've learned that a lot of employers are unwilling to give basic protections on the job for workers. So it's really important that workers are organized in solidarity. And oftentimes their rep will be the person who kind of leads that effort. And we're really proud of having hired Evan Yates, who came from the UFCW. And he's one of our new reps. And he's really amazing and has shown the power of having a rep who understands how to organize workers. One of the things we're also doing to get these first contracts is having more individuals at the bargaining table who are from the local. Before, it would be just one rep, and then, of course, having the workers themselves lead the bargaining. There are a lot of units where workers weren't leading bargaining. It was just the rep kind of coming in and speaking for all the workers. And that, we found, is not as effective as just having workers who are super informed about their contract and the bargaining history, and having them lead bargaining. So part of the first contract negotiations is making sure that the workers are more informed about the process, as well as having the support of a rep, but then also having an additional presence of WBNG so that we can understand what the needs of workers are. And that's not for every shop. Some shops just need the rep and the workers kind of lead the process. But if these are people who just are in a union, they might need that help. And that's what we're trying to provide currently, because every contract, we were just talking about this at a local meeting, every contract is a gold standard for the next shop, because those attorneys for the companies are looking at other units' contracts and they want to see what other units have agreed to. So if we agree to a bad provision in one contract, you can imagine the attorneys for other units that are represented within WBNG are looking at that language and saying, well, you agreed to that there, you must agree to it here.
Sure.
So our effort is in first contracts to make sure that they're the best contracts and that they keep elevating all of the others within our ecosystem.
Gotcha. Fatima, one more question here. You've been doing a lot of organizing in the nonprofit sector. I saw that on your website, and you kind of touched on that earlier. Is that more difficult or easier? What's the answer on that one?
That's a great question, because on one hand, nonprofits are more inclined to start as closed shops, which makes organizing in the post-contract conversation easier in that sense. But at the same time, we do find that nonprofit employers are sometimes some of the most brutal on their workers in terms of the asks of them on the job. I know that the AFL-CIO for some time gave workers like 2 weeks or less than a week before they brought them back into the office. And this was sort of when the pandemic was still raging. And we didn't really see that at private employers. And I thought to myself, wow, that's really unfair. And we do see that with nonprofit employers and staff unions, that they are brutal on their workers sometimes, not all of them, but it is a problem that I think, because the labor union ecosystem is very self-protecting and insulated, because we're such a small percentage of the workforce still, and hopefully that changes. There is sort of a reluctance to call out the fact that these nonprofit employers and a lot of unions themselves mistreat their workers. And that goes back to the burnout issue that I was talking about before, where employers kind of a lot of times will prey on the goodwill of workers who really want to make the world a better place and see workers get good benefits on the job and want to be represented and want to go out representing others. A lot of times employers will take advantage of that. It doesn't matter if you work for a union or if you work for a massive financial services firm and you're in the staff union, or if you're in the union there, employers are always going to be employers. And that's something that at WBNG, I sort of, in my goodbye message to the members and to the staff, I let them know that I really hope that in the future, WBNG doesn't become an employer like the ones that we fight against, because it's so easy for people who employ other people, no matter who you are, to take advantage of them. And we don't want to do that desperately.
Very interesting. Sometimes you have to look in the mirror and see what's really going on, especially in your local. All right, Fatima, we're going to leave it on that note. Fatima Hussein, president of the Washington Baltimore News Guild, website WBNG.org. I really enjoy talking to you. There's a lot, I'm sure, that we can talk about in the new year, so let's keep in touch, okay?
Definitely. Thank you so much.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Mike McManus of the United Association.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Buildings, bridges, skyscrapers, and more. Structures that are the face of our cities and towns were built by members of the Iron Workers Union. That's why it's important that our workforce of over 130,000 iron workers continues to be the safest and best trained in the field. With 154 training centers, we invest over $90 million annually in safety and training. We're growing the next generation of union iron workers. There are so many reasons to put your trust in our iron workers and their employers. Learn more about us at ironworkers.org.
Chris LaGrange here, host of UCOM Live with Chris LaGrange. News, talk, sports, and workforce politics. The fastest growing podcast on, in, and around the internet. Join us live every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and Twitter, with archives on UCOMLive.com. Our loud and colorful panelists bring you current events like no other. So follow and subscribe today wherever great podcasts are found.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at BoydWatterson.com.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
Hey, don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle is at AWF Union Podcast. What I'm going to do right now is play like a 10-minute clip here from Mark McManus, and this is a recent video that he posted for his fellow union members, the United Association, which is, what, 350-some thousand members across the United States and Canada. And Mark was talking about the many new provisions in the new Infrastructure and Jobs Act, and he also called out the people who did not vote on it. Let's listen here on America's Workforce.
The partisan Republicans in the House of Representatives who joined the so-called progressive squad of six Democrats to vote no, voted against good union jobs for our members. We'll remember. It's as simple as that. They should all be ashamed. Is it not progressive to have clean water, safe bridges, broadband, new energy technology? Disgraceful. Representatives AOC, Cori Bush, Tahib, Republican representatives Jim Jordan, Matt Gaetz, Marjorie Greene, when they are all on one side, the UA will absolutely be on the other side, because they are the extremists in both parties, and that does not work for America on this bill, and it doesn't work for any other thing. The positive note is this was a bipartisan piece of legislation in a country that is becoming anything but bipartisan. The UA will remember and support the good folks, Republicans, and Democrats who voted for a massive investment in the future jobs for us, the UA members. Let's look exactly where and how much this will help the UA and our members. First off, it includes language to speed up permitting on all infrastructure projects by cutting government red tape, long overdue, and modernizing the entire process. Energy, let's talk numbers. $30 billion for clean energy R&D funding, $30 billion for innovation funding, $5.7 billion for small modular nukes, $6 billion to help existing nuke plants, $3.5 billion for carbon capture, $8 billion for hydrogen hubs. As you can see, it goes on and on and on in the energy sector. It is just real, real good work for the United Association, including $4.7 billion to repair and replace existing natural gas pipelines. Let's head to the water. $54 billion, $55 billion in clean water funding, drinking water funding for every state in the country, $8.3 billion for water recycling, storage, and reuse, $2 billion for regional and state clean water programs. This is every state in the nation. $3.4 billion for tribal lands, $5 billion for waste and water treatment projects. That is right in the UA's wheelhouse. For 132 years, the UA has never been afraid of new innovation, new technology, and new opportunities. And we never should be. We will continue to embrace them all. Carbon capture, hydrogen, existing nukes, small modular nukes, and massive investment in clean water. Retrofitting buildings, these all fall under the crafts of the UA. All of this with UA and union labor standards like prevailing wage and registered apprenticeships tied to it. We should be excited and overjoyed. This is truly a transformational bill for our country's infrastructure that will provide remarkable opportunities and advancements. No longer will the United States of America have a worse public infrastructure than many foreign countries. However, we can and we should be disappointed about a pipeline that was canceled a year ago, or any good UA job that doesn't happen for whatever reason. It hurts all of us, but we can't cut off our noses to spite our face. We have to focus on the present and fight for the future. We will take the opportunities we have now, continue to fight for all our work each and every day. That's exactly where we're going with this infrastructure bill, on all of this funding that will lead to more man hours for the UA. When we look at the whole picture, the fact is the Biden administration has issued more drilling permits in 11 months than the Trump administration did in 4 years. That's a fact. In court, the Biden administration ensured Line 3 became fully operational October 1. It's a pipeline that goes from Edmonton, Alberta to Superior, Wisconsin, 1,097 miles with 760,000 barrels of oil. The Biden administration stood with us in New Jersey Supreme Court to support Penn East Pipeline against the Democratic governor and a far left green coalition. We will no doubt have our battles and maybe some losses with this administration in the coming months and years. But today, the success we've had is more than a solid win. It's a great foundation to build for the future of our great union. I know all our members didn't agree with our endorsement last election. And yeah, the country's divided. I get it, but I said it before, and I'll keep saying it. We have to call balls and strikes. No candidate or no administration will please everyone, or the UA as a whole, and that's okay. We need to hold all the politicians accountable and make sure we deliver for our membership every chance we get. But here was the criteria of our political engagement committee when we were looking to endorse the candidates. Number one, pensions. Joe Biden and the administration delivered $98 billion for our plans that needed it in the American Rescue Plan. Multiple administrations gave us nothing. $98 billion ensures our retirees, our future retirees, and our younger workers solid retirement plans. An unbelievable win. The apprentices, the IRAP mess from the previous administration. That was delivered by this administration big time by overturning that disastrous rule. The people that need to be handling the apprenticeship programs, the certified, legitimate, certified apprenticeship programs are the business managers, are the training coordinators, and are the UA teachers, along, most importantly, with the UA journeymen teaching the apprentices out in the field. Not the previous president's daughter telling us how we should run our apprenticeship programs. So that is now behind us, but an excellent win as well. Number three was the infrastructure. They delivered big time with this bipartisan infrastructure bill that is now law. Multiple presidencies, Republican and Democrats, could never get this over the finish line. It is a wonderful win for America, as we said, and for the UA. Four, workers' rights. Union provisions in every piece of legislation and a strong NLRB cracking down on bad actors. It's a wonderful thing for the UA. And five, energy. We won some here and we lost some. And it is that way with every administration, Republicans or Democrats. The grade may not be where we want it, but we will continue to push for all the above energy approach, and we will continue to make progress. How about other wins? Marty Walsh, who worked as a building trades member with a union book in his pocket and tools in his hand, replaced the most anti-union man in America, Gene Scalia, son of the anti-worker Supreme Court Justice Anton Scalia, as the Secretary of Labor for all of us. On top of all of that, our very own Ray Boyd and Veterans and Piping Administrator Mike Hazard, along with local union 798 member and retired UA Director of Pipeline Dave Barnett, have been put on critical federal government committees that will shape the future of organized labor in this country. We have a strong seat at the table. This country now has added 5.5 million jobs in the last 10 months, after losing 4 million jobs the previous 4 years. We're now just signing the world's largest auto manufacturing facility, Ford, in Tennessee, and a massive battery plant in Paducah, Kentucky. Chip factories in New Mexico and Arizona alone are $100 billion in the next 10 years. We are blessed with the skill set we possess for the emerging and existing piping work that's in front of all of us. So since it's football season, I'll close with a quote from the great coach, Vince Lombardi. It's what's up on the scoreboard that counts. How true. The UA and its market share are at a record high. The energy, infrastructure, chip, automotive, LNG, commercial, residential, service markets are exploding. We have an administration that is not only not hostile to organized labor, but they embrace organized labor at every turn. Every other word out of President Biden's mouth is union, and put the fear of God in his agencies and staff that they better ensure every job they create is a union job with good wages and benefits. So the message is extremely good news. Let's take a win when we can get it, but let's continue to strive and push this administration and the one that follows it for more. More for our livelihoods, more for our families. Thanks for all that you do each and every day.
Again, that's Mark McManus, General President of the United Association of Union Plumbers and Pipefitters. I love what he said. No longer will the United States of America have a worse public infrastructure than many foreign countries. Hard to believe that we're in that position. All right, that's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up tomorrow, Dorsey Hager and Fred Redman of the AFL-CIO. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.